The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, welcome to the WrestleMania edition of the One Fall Podcast. Joshua, Adam William Arbuthnot with the ultimate babyface, Mr. Joel Johnson.
That's some good shit.
And the futurist, the pastest, the crown prince of charisma, the trivia quiz champion. Ladies and gentlemen, M to the O, it's Mo.
Yeah, and the high roller of rock and roller. What is it? The Ayatollah of rock and roller.
Oh, my God. You just add something on. I finally nailed it.
Every podcast, one more.
I nailed it that time.
I know.
You son of a bitch.
That's always my favorite one from Jericho, was the Ayatollah of rock and roller. I thought that was hilarious.
That's a good one.
Just because eventually we're going to get there, and you've mentioned Jericho, so I want to take this opportunity to just say, when Chris Jericho battles Matt Hardy in the Hardy compound, and eventually Chris Jericho gets thrown in the Lake of Reincarnation, and we get to see some old Jerichos pop up, it's going to be fantastic, and I will pay AEW $20 to see that match, because it would be like a movie ticket.
I see that. I can see that. I wonder what they would do. Yeah, I mean, you have to be careful with those gimmicks because he doesn't technically own any of them. So,
I feel like they're Jericho and Matt are creative enough that I feel like they can work through whatever little legal loopholes they may or may not run into.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I just want to see brother Nero again, and you know what? I'm the only guy who liked Willow. So what the hell?
You don't see him for a while, though.
No, it'll be another year.
Yeah, because he's under contract for a while. I guess before we kind of get to the Mania card, this WrestleMania, you know, obviously the circumstances that WWE didn't want to talk about, but their commercial sure did, dealing with the COVID crisis and everything with that. I know Mo has a part on Stephanie's association with this, but before we kind of get to that stuff, the one thing that will be taken from this Mania was the cinematic prestige television type of matches that were the biggest takeaway from everybody. And you know, seeing these with Ultimate Deletions, this is nothing new for us, but as far as to be, they really doubled down on this. And this is the biggest talking point that they've had. I mean, you would think any other night that they showed active footage of CM Punk on WrestleMania, that would be one of the biggest talking points, but that's something that's just going to be glared over tonight. As far as these cinematic matches go, what does this mean for the future? I mean, you've already seen guys for the for Taker, like, and some rumors of the Sting match could actually happen now, and now there's stuff with Bray, like, how could Bray ever go back in the ring? Taker should never go back in the ring. What is the future with these? What is the future with this, and where do they go now with these, with the onslaught of these? I'll start with you, Mo.
The future, I mean, the feedback, because the feedback is so good, obviously they're going to do something with it. I just find it ironic that when they did Ultimate Deletion, right before it happened, that, you know, Michael Cole on Vince's instructions says what you're about to see is obnoxious and surreal, and we apologize ahead of time. And then comes back and he again apologizes and insults it. Now that Matt Hardy's gone, they feel comfortable doing this, and Ultimate Deletion got all this great feedback, and so it's just ironic to me that now, but I mean, I applaud them for doing it in some ways, because I it's not really my bag, to be honest with you, but wrestling needs to move forward, and Matt Hardy certainly laid a nice template, they did some interesting things. They have done stuff like this before, but this, it worked better, I'd say, both of these tonight. That said, I mean, I don't know that you can consistently mix it in, because it completely, like, how can I take the McIntyre winning the belt seriously after I've just seen what I've seen with John Cena and Bray Wyatt? Like, how can you? Or you know, AJ Styles being buried and dead and dirt. It's like I've always had a difficulty with the sports entertainment being too unrealistic and too, especially supernatural elements. To me, it always takes me out of the show. So I don't know really what the future is with it. What do you think, Joel?
You know, I'm torn because as someone that loves production and editing and cutting and putting together stuff and just it looking amazing, like both of these from a production standpoint just were a home run. Like I thought the AJ one looked fantastic. I thought they shot it very well. I thought, you know, say what you will about acting for some of these wrestlers, but I thought the cheesiness and just everything with this was great. And I thought they had a lot of nice little moments peppered in for that. I've definitely enjoyed the final deletion and more of that stuff and like the Vanguard One use and just that world that Matt created. And even the editing and the stuff that they used for Bray was great. Like the Saturday Night Main Event, they basically, if you kind of broke it down, the Bray Wyatt thing was a treasure trove of Easter eggs for hardcore, long-term wrestling fans. And when you think about it, every little thing that happened in the Bray and Cena was really a reflection on Cena's failures. So his failure at the beginning of not potentially almost getting fired, and they alluded to that with Bray, the working out and his failed body career when he's sitting there doing the lifting the weights in the Saturday Night Main Event, his failed rapping career that never fully took off, and eventually that giving in to all these failures and finally swinging the chair and becoming the Hulk Hogan NWO and ultimately losing. So little things like that I really enjoy because that's a different way to tell a story in professional wrestling. But I do agree, it's very hard to find the right placement for it and find the right way to use it in the right time. I was off the podcast, I was talking to Josh after night one, and I said you can almost do these as like a Tuesday or Wednesday night special on the network. Say Taker versus Sting in this Boneyard match, and it'll be on the network, exclusively on the network. It'll be 15 minutes. If you order the network and you watch it here, you get to see it and kind of take it away from it interfering with your weekly wrestling products. So you do create a little bit of a separation, and you do give the audience a choice of whether they want to be involved with it or not. I think that may be a solution to it. But I'm always hard pressed on doing these podcasts right away after because I'm always I waffle and I think and I let ideas and thoughts marinate. And right now I'm really high on these cinematic matches because I feel like it's a whole new avenue that professional wrestling can really dive into. And I feel like it can give a guy like The Undertaker another 5 years. Because I feel you can do these and you can really get things down pat and you're physically protecting these guys more. And I think that's a big thing. That's why Matt created the Broken Universe, was to physically protect himself because of how much of a beating he took from everything that he went through. So it's really, it's finding that balance because I think this is a good idea. And I think this is something that they can really help take that next step forward for some of their guys, but you need to find that balance. You can't just go all in on it. You got to be, because pro wrestling is still pro wrestling. I don't need to see a cinematic Okada Naito match. I'm perfectly content seeing what the two guys can do in the ring.
And this is not pro wrestling. That is the thing about it, right? I mean, you have to, and I guess that was probably my problem with it is, and I probably enjoyed tonight's more because I knew what was coming and I feel like it fit the characters better. Whereas AJ just felt a little out of place to me and under Biker to Biker Taker, wherever you want to go. That character is a little less to me in this type of world. But I literally was watching that last night thinking, you know, if I want to watch a movie, I'll watch a movie with better production values, better special effects, better sets, and much better acting. That was my reaction to it. I'm like, this, I don't blame anybody if they enjoy it, and I know that most people did, but I get it, why they enjoyed it. But for me, I was like, if I want to watch that, I'll watch something else. And if I want to watch wrestling, give me wrestling.
And that's ultimately the thing, because this is sports entertainment. This is that world that Vince wants versus the world. Like I look at it as there's a very much a difference between what this is and what pro wrestling. I still equate pro wrestling with Japan. I don't equate pro wrestling with WWE, because I think you can just see in the cards that they're very vastly different in what they offer. And I almost feel like when you watch WWE, you almost know what you're getting. It's almost the expectation, you know, that this is the way it's going to go. And when you want professional wrestling, you go to Japan or you go to the Indies. That's just the way things have kind of shake down in professional wrestling.
My question for you guys, then, for both of you, then, my question is, if we're talking about this, so what's the difference between this and essentially what they ended up doing with Edge and Orton?
Yeah.
Other than the location, what's the difference?
Number one, that match went entirely too long.
As far as you know, the tone and the way it was shot and the way it's edited and the way it's, you know, the story that's told in these things, it was not a match, right? It was also cinematic.
See, when you break it down like that, this was essentially a cinematic WrestleMania. Both of these were cinematic manias, both nights. And I just don't think it worked. I feel like having the production value that they did in the Boneyard and the Firefly versus what they had in ring was better for the Boneyard match, because you knew that you were getting edits, you knew you were getting cuts. The wrestling, they try to trick you and they try to establish that this is all going on at one time and one singular event with everything happening and no ebbs and flows, when the reality is I can't give any star ratings to any of these matches, because as entertaining as some of these matches were, and there were a few good matches on Mania, ultimately it was a cut together, you could do takes. I don't know. I just
like Lucha Underground was.
Yeah.
And
I feel like, did Lucha Underground do it better than what WWE did?
Yeah, I think they did it even a little better. Yeah. But then again, they also had more time. They had more time to prepare, and they knew what they were doing. WWE was kind of thrown into this at the last minute.
The thing that WWE has is, and they were able to use it, is that catalog. Tonight, the difference between the Taker one, which was much more an Ultimate Deletion one, this was kind of WWE's value of it. And I kind of talked to Joel about this. I pictured this being a very, like, far away from home, Mysterio Spider-Man type of thing. And it was, right? It was very psychedelic and transformative and storytelling of how they did it. And they, you know, really used Easter eggs. And they used the library that they have, the catalog of things that they have, and were really able to make that work. And you were talking about, well, what's the difference between the two of them? I think the tone that you set with Taker and AJ worked a lot better than the tone you took with Edge and Orton. You know, I felt like these are two guys that literally want to bury each other alive. As corny and as cheesy as it was, and like they went at each other, and I felt like this was a real fight. And when Edge and Randy are going at it, despite how long it was going, I felt at times that it was just the silliness didn't work at times, when Edge is swinging from the gym equipment or from the cage roof or for whatever. The length obviously had a big part to do with it, but I think the tone of it was just so off as well, of how they went with it. And you can have last man standing matches and storytell, right? And the AJ match did a pretty good job of storytelling in that, where I thought Edge and Christian, Edge and Randy, the storytelling element of it wasn't very good.
I would agree with that. There's not much psychology to what they're doing. Essentially, it was you punch me twice, then throw me into something. Then I'll punch you twice and throw me into something.
Yeah.
Rinse and repeat for 25 minutes of the 36 or 37 minutes that it was. A little bit different at the beginning, a little bit different at the end. But that middle part, the middle 25 minutes, was literally punch, throw me to something, then your turn. And that got old.
I feel like that was a symptom of a lot of matches at Mania. I felt that, like, for example, I thought the worst match overall for this weekend was Corbin and Elias, because while they have nice moves, the meat and potatoes in between it, just there was nothing there. There was nothing that made me connect, care, or be engaged within that match. And I just thought it was a waste of time. And I really like Aleister Black. But it was the same with the Aleister Black and Bobby Lashley. It was like, I don't care about this. Like, this lacked anything in between the moves that made it matter. Like, I look at like the Okada and Kenny match, that trilogy, or Johnny and Ciampa in New Orleans. There were things in there that made me care, and there were points where I felt like I knew the characters. And I could grab onto the characters. A lot of times within this WrestleMania, there were points where I'm like, well, why do I care? Like, why does this match matter? Why is this on? There were four matches I wanted to see. There were four matches by the end of this that I wanted to continue. I watched and I enjoyed. And that was Baszler and Becky, Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. And the Boneyard, Firefly Funhouse, and Drew, just because I really like Drew. I don't know about the match, but this really exposed, we've talked about it countless times, and Mo, you've talked about it countless times. You can just see how boring and flat the WWE style is. And it was, the Edge and Randy match was just a glaring example of, like, they're just throwing each other into the wall a bunch of times. I saw that more than any other wrestling move on in that match between the two of them. And
it got old.
Well, how's about in the Goldberg and the Braun match, or then with the Drew and the Brock match? There's a
same
new
match.
We kind of talk about, yeah, we talk about the template of the cinematic match. Well, now there's a template of the big man boom match, where yeah. I do my move on you, then I do you do your move on me, and then it ends, where that was mastered at WrestleMania's, what, 2-3 years ago with Goldberg and Brock. They mastered it. It was nailed down. But this was just lazy. It was like spear, spear, spear. Cool, I'm done. Slam, slam, slam. Okay, done. F5, F5, suplex, Claymore, Claymore, Claymore. It's like, yeah, what?
I feel like, again, this goes back to one of the points that I think I made. It may have been one of you, but I'm gonna temporarily take credit for it. Is I just think that there was a general lack of caring across the board, and everyone just wanted to go home. No one wanted to be there except Vince. I think everyone else was like, I'd much rather just be at home and ride this out, and when it gets better, we can pick everything up. Because here's the thing. You do Mania, but there's no follow-up to anything that happened. And now we're waiting 6 months for follow-up. And you think Vince McMahon has the memory for follow-up for half of these? No way. There's no chance Vince has the memory to follow up all of the anything that happened at Mania. So it just seemed like a poor choice. And I think most of the guys, like, I think the guys went out there and tried. I'm not saying none of them cared and they were all going through the motions. I think a lot of them cared and wanted to do the best that they could. But I think there was that little part of them that all just wanted to go home and just be done with it, because it just was, it was such small potatoes in the grand scheme of things.
I know you did say that yesterday. I didn't get the sense of that. I think more what it was there's a few things that they made a mistake with. For instance, one of the things that AEW has done that's worked really well in their empty arenas here is they have put the other wrestlers at ringside and had them cheering. And even though it's not a lot of people cheering, just the idea of some of that noise makes a big difference in the match and the psychology of the match and getting the fan into the match. And the fact that they have nobody there, I think, is part of what you're sensing. It's just that there's no buzz if there's nothing in the around the arena. Also, the fact AEW darkens everything helps. The fact that they kept this light and they made it looked like the Performance Center the entire time, just with the with a WrestleMania set, but it still looked like the Performance Center. So for me, when I'm watching it the whole time, I'm sitting there going, I have the feeling like this is a fine match, but it's like the match they would perform for their trainers to get feedback on. That's what it felt like to me every time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that hurt it for me, well, there were positives, and like I said, there were a handful of matches I definitely enjoyed and definitely could get into. I think ultimately there was enough times where you could see that there were edits and cuts. Like you could tell when they were like, all right, we're going to go here. All right, we're going to redo this, because you can just see the general positioning slightly off to where from one cut to another. And I even mean the them throwing Uso off the ladder. And it's so
that was the most glaring one to me. The idea that you see him, he goes off the ladder, but you don't see him fall. You don't see him land. You don't see a replay. And then they cut to it about 3-4 seconds later, and he's lying on the ground. And then he gets back in the ring really quickly when they say he must be out for the match. That's the type of thing that I'll tell you another thing though that I think that
maybe a major didn't have to take the bump though.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't have to take the bump though. I'm sure he took something into a crash pad. Much like I think that was one of my problems actually was when AJ went off that off the I don't know what was it barn or whatever. You could see him land on the crash pad, and then and then when they cut to it afterwards, it was gone. And I was like, man, that stuff I understand why you have to do it, but it just I wouldn't accept that in a movie. I don't know why I would accept that here. Like, it doesn't look good. But
we
I think
accept
one of
the cheese, which is a good point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Kind of schlocky, right? But I think one of the other big things, I mean, there was a laziness to some of the stuff. We talk about a laziness to not explaining why Braun Strowman, we had talked about ourselves, Braun Strowman being in the match. There was no, you know, or Miz not being in the match. There's a laziness to that. One of the other things I think that was a big misstep was you guys had mentioned it looks like Raw, feels like Raw, and that's the thing. There was no special entrances that were like, wow, that's a WrestleMania entrance. Like, things like that are the production value, and there's WrestleMania should have a majestic, grand feel. It
even
should not feel
attires,
like Raw.
Mo.
Pardon me?
Even the attires. Even the attires, outside of Seth? Like, I didn't feel like anyone had, like, their special WrestleMania, like, new tights on. Like,
no.
Outside of Seth. I didn't feel like, oh, I guess you could maybe wear your attire. Yeah, Rhea, I guess.
But that was
like,
different. But I think that's them trying to glam her up. But yeah, you're right. The gear wasn't different.
No. It felt, and that's why you kind of bring up all this, is, you know, and this is where I'm going to give you your chance to go off and Steph. It felt like, yeah, you know, I get it. And maybe we're going to be a little bit lighter on this Mania due to the pandemic going on right that. And it was a chance to kind of laugh and, you know, enjoy some entertainment that we're, you know, that we get while we're dealing with this. And, you know, cool, I understand that. And I will admit there's times I got to, you know, have that escapism with all that for sure. But I think my takeaway from it at the end of the day from this is this show should have been postponed and put into an arena or something down the road.
Yeah, it should have been postponed. But if you were going to do it, you should have spent some time to create entrances that were unique for WrestleMania that really blew people away to give it that magic.
Well, you did it for the Bray and for the Taker stuff, right? You put enough into that.
Yeah.
So why not put enough into those other situations? Okay. And it kind of takes a mark out of Hunter. Like, Paul Levesque has been looked at as very, like, very positive by the IWC for the last handful of years, right? It's like, oh, we do trust Hunter. We may not trust Vince, we may not trust Carano or Stephanie, but Paul Levesque is our guy. We trust Paul Levesque. And he promised this big thing with Braun. And he said, and you know what? Because Hunter had built up such a great repertoire lately with us, we're like, okay, I trust Paul Levesque. Paul Levesque is someone that I trust. And none of that came to fruition.
None of that came to fruition.
And that trust kind of got taken away.
And I don't have a big rant on the Stephanie at the beginning thing. It's really – my big rant is about the WrestleMania moment thing, but that hasn't come up yet, and I'll wait till it does organically because that'll play into it. But the thing about the Steph, yeah, at the beginning, and we're here, and we want to thank you, and we're going to – it's all self-congratulatory. It's all it's all this patting yourself on the back, which is what a heel would do, you know?
The 9/11 situation.
Yes, exactly, which they still do. It's just
– they'll
like,
be the first
just,
to do
just
this
put it on
COVID, too.
Just put it on.
Yeah,
absolutely they will. And you know what? And if it's if you deserve the credit, you'll get the credit. You don't need that whole thing of how look at us. We're so great. We're doing this for you. Aren't we great? Don't you love us? I hate that. I hate that so much.
Mm-hmm. We're here to put smiles on faces.
I hate that so much. All right, where are we going from there?
All right, let's go and talk about the card as is. All right, let's do that, shall we?
Yeah.
By the way, what is with Stephanie and these long bows on her neck lately?
I don't know.
She's really digging those. Start with night. First of all, she is. We start with night one. The pre-show match, Cesaro versus Drew Gulak. I thought it was a fine match. I would like to see more of these guys. I really like the airplane spin. I had never really seen that before. Like an armless airplane spin by Cesaro. And I'm happy that Gulak's getting more time. I don't really know what to say other than that.
I think you
summed it up for me too.
Yeah,
I didn't see the match, so I'm gonna have to take your word on it.
The Kabuki Warriors versus Bliss and Nikki Cross. Kabuki Warriors won. I really liked this match. I thought that they worked really well, but I think that's because of Asuka and Kairi. I thought Nikki was at her best. Again, though, you have a situation where you can edit. Bliss does the Twisted Bliss onto Kairi's legs. Why not re-edit that if you have the ability for her to get the complete Twisted Bliss?
Yeah, it was a bad looking finish. It absolutely, she should have done it again. Because she landed it wrong and then you know Kane had to sell Kairi Sane had to sell it. Now I find Nikki Cross's character that she had in NXT far more interesting than what they've done. But this was the match where it was. I mean, this is the second match I'm watching. This is where I already got one of my major negatives with the show. And I don't know if you guys have the capability to pull up, say, any match on the show and just watch like 30 seconds of it. It doesn't matter. But if you guys could do that. Even while we're recording, that would be great. If you can't, that's fine. But
well, it's on YouTube.
I would have. Pardon me.
They're all on YouTube. 30 seconds of them. So.
Yeah. So go to any match and count the and watch 30 seconds. Any match at all, except for the cinematic matches. But any match that was in ring, and the Asuka and Kairi Sane versus Cross and Bliss would be perfect. Go watch 30 seconds of that match, and while you do it, start counting how many cuts you see.
No,
in 30 seconds.
I know exactly where you're going. No way am I spending that time counting 40 cuts in 10 seconds.
Kevin Dunn cutters.
It was so annoying. And it's not the way wrestling presents itself best. I mean, Joel, you were talking about this, how things didn't have the impact and whatever and to you. I think that was a lot of it, was when you are constantly cutting away from the person, the facial reactions, the moves, and the impact, you don't get the sense of story, and nothing breathes. It was like a Michael Bay on speed. It was
Kevin
brutal.
Dunn was in his element. Kevin Dunn had his element.
And it happened for every match both nights, and I hated it, and it really hurt the event for me.
Yeah,
I'm watching Natty and Liv on it, and I've counted in 20 seconds more. I've counted 10.
Yeah, there you go. I was counting, and I was seeing every two
match.
Yeah, every 2 seconds, I was seeing a cut when I was counting.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Literally, it was 2 seconds cut, 2 seconds cut, 2 seconds cut. That is terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, you take points from New Japan, like again to bring them up. Yet again, but you look at how often they just let things sit and breathe, and you still feel the impact for the matches. You still feel the impact of that pile driver or the dive over the top rope. Here it's just like next thing, next thing, next thing. You're already moving on to the next thing. You know, the more you talk about, the more I think this is kind of an example that WWE's style is kind of like how I feel about Wolf of Wall Street. I think it's a good movie, but I think it's a lot of just, it's almost candy. It's like, here you go. Here's a piece of candy. It has no substance to it. It's on to the next thing, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. I think that's really, really WWE's MO is just on to the next thing, on to the next thing. You don't.
If you guys, either one of you, go back, say, name yourselves a match that you love from 10 years ago and think about the camera work, it was very different than anything you saw at this WrestleMania, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, you've been watching some older matches recently, Josh. I mean, what was one of the matches you watched that you loved? I mean, the camera work would have been very different.
Bret and Austin. Yeah. They don't really change that a lot. I mean, I was watching WrestleMania 1 today, and obviously they aren't what they are there, so that's a bad example. But a good example is I was watching 30 today with Brian Wins, and I saw the Hunter match. There's a lot of cuts in that Hunter match. And you don't really think about it at the time because you're rooting for Brian at that point, right? Even that Taker and Brock match, there's a lot of cuts in that as well. More cuts now because Dunn had the freedom to do whatever the hell he wanted to do. But still a lot of cuts then. So
There was more cameras at work by the time you get to 30. But we're not talking a cut every 2 seconds. We're not talking a cut as soon as a moon gets hit, immediately cut to another angle. Or immediately cut to the person on their apron. Or immediately to whatever.
So the Natty and the Liv segment I saw that I did for your little experiment here is it was literally Natty is on the ropes. Natty and Liv are on the ropes. Liv goes, so they have kind of the hard camera look right there. Liv elbows Natty, right? Natty elbows Liv, cuts, then Natty does her little run thing, cut, then Natty does the drop kick, cut. Then Natty picks up Liv, cut. Then Natty throws her to the rope, cut. It's like every single thing there was a different cut. Instead of like, maybe we'll just focus on the hard camera, and if we need to, we'll go to something.
Yeah, like, exactly, which is what it should be. Times to go close on somebody and go tight on somebody to show the emotion or pain in their face. But to do it constantly after every – and to never let us really feel like any move landed, it's brutal.
I think, to me, in this really weird time, I'm surprised they just didn't go hard camera and then use, like, to just reduce the number of people around to just have one roaming camera operator. I mean, you're going to have two or three for Edge. But, I mean, we know this is all being taped, editing, all that jazz. So you really do two cameras, one roaming, one hard camera, and then if you need to get a different angle, you just freaking redo it and have the guy with the camera move to a different angle if you want a different shot.
And there has been events in New Japan, because you mentioned them a couple times, where before they were properly broadcasting every single show in the G1, sometimes they would just set up the hard camera and have no announcers, and you could watch the match. And I saw 4.5-star matches that way, with just a hard camera, no announcers. Because all I needed to do was watch the story the gentlemen are telling, you know, in the ring. And that we do not necessarily, I mean, this doesn't allow, there's no chance for psychology when you're doing it this way. You know, it really kills that.
Because you're absolutely right. Because the camera operators are doing one thing, the wrestlers are doing another, and there's no way that they can operate in perfect sync because you can't read minds. You can't sit there and be like, okay, I know where they're going and this is what they're doing. Sometimes you just got to be like, all right, let's go wide. We'll let stuff happen and then we'll go in tight for when Austin's bleeding.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? I generally hate Michael Bay movies, except for Pain and Gain. That was good.
Yeah. The Rock's okay. A little corny, but The Rock's okay. But this Kabuki Warriors match, I enjoyed it. I didn't like the outcome of it. But I'm wondering if this is now maybe the idea that now they can let Asuka kind of breathe. Kari looked pretty bummed to be there, probably because she couldn't get on that pirate ship.
Biggest thing they missed out on.
Kari's
just there to be Asuka's little buddy, the one who gets beat up to set up Asuka for her match.
She's figured out what she needs to do in the main roster to get over, though, Asuka. She kind of has found her role on the main roster of what she needed to do to get over, and I think she's kind of finally caught their attention. It's unfortunate it wasn't from the in-ring situation overall, what we know. But I think she's finally kind of landed her spot on the main roster.
And she does seem to have found it herself. Like, it does seem to be something that she's done. And then, and another thing that was really obvious in that match and carry through the night was the idea that they clearly said to them, okay, there's no crowd, so talk to each other and grunt and do everything much, much louder the whole night. And sometimes that was a little annoying. And not so much in that match, because Asuka's in the Ripley Flair match, it was one of the matches where it was really bugging me. I'm like, oh man. And same thing in I think it was Seth and Owens. There was a point where I was just like, they're just groaning, and it's like, oh, and I'm like,
Takers is bad. Takers
yeah,
is bad.
Take well take yeah.
I love the shit talking the most in I like the shit talking the most really in Liv and Natty. I like the shit talking in that, because it was kind of the teacher getting the students to like be better. I kind of like the storytelling they did with that. It was surprisingly entertaining.
I like Usos. Yeah. You know, he talks good trash, you know, like he entertained me with doing it. But when Corbin was doing it, it was not entertaining.
No. So before we get to that match, anything less for you guys having the Kabuki Warrior match?
It's fine. Okay.
I don't really care about Elias and Corbin. It sucked. It was the worst match of the event. I have no thoughts on it. I'd rather just move on unless you guys have anything.
No, I think as a babyface, Elias really tried to fire up and play an intense babyface, but it's just so tough to buy it from him, especially with his gimmick and how he's being presented in the past. And I wish, if you're going to fall off that fall, make that fake fall that they did, freaking sell it for like more than like 10 seconds late in the match.
He lost out on that pop too, right? Coming down to the pop. Sorry, Joel. Go ahead, Joel.
The one thing that I look at with this is you got two guys that obviously you put stock into. I really look at this as being that undercard WrestleMania match that it's getting them both single match experience for potentially doing more down the line. And so it just felt like this match was pointless because you're not getting that experience, because you're just doing what you would do on a Monday Night Raw or a Friday Night SmackDown, or training in front of Hunter and Vince for their enjoyment. Like, it just, this was a pointless match to have on the card.
And this more than any match felt like a match that you do at the Performance Center, where Scott Hall afterwards would come up and give you some pointers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point. Bex and Shayna Baszler. I thought, you know, this match was fine. The ending was a little bit finicky. I guess I get it. The idea of the storytelling was Baszler had her, and then Becky barely got out, and then we go on to continue the feud. But I don't know if that's the case, because I kind of wonder if eventually maybe the Nia feud is next still, because they still have her on deck to end that back up, and now we know Bianca's up, so I don't really know where they're going with this.
Well, the one thing I look at with this is I thought it was an enjoyable match. I enjoyed this match, but the problem is the finish. I think we've seen at least twice to three times on NXT this exact same finish. So anyone that's paid attention to NXT will be like, well, we've already seen this before. This kind of
well, NXT talent's lost tonight, by the way.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, both NXT talent's lost. Main roster talent.
Good way to build them up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, you guys covered this one well. I'm ready to move on. Nothing to add.
Sammy and Brian. I think Joel has the most to add with this. I thought it was, you know, it was an entertaining match. It was Sammy's first singles match since 2018 when he faced Lashley. Remember that terrible?
Oh my God! Is it that
angle?
Long? Dude. Yeah. Oh yeah. That. If there's any angle that shows how much like it. What is it with Lashley? He cannot get in good angles. But, yeah, I mean, writers suck.
Yeah. Joel, you have a lot to add on this.
So, because we've had conversation previously, I want to get Mo's take on this. So, there was, before this match happened, there was a Twitter thread that popped up by, I don't remember the Twitter handle's name, but this guy is massive fan of pro wrestling and massive fan of like long-term storytelling and little nuanced details in wrestling matches. And he loves El Generico, Sami Zayn, even though they're different people, he loves them equally. And it just, he had a whole Twitter thread breaking down Sami Zayn's moveset and how it's changed over time. Because he makes a point that some of the moves have changed because of him going to a heel, so he doesn't want to get that babyface reaction. But he also made a point that there were a lot of moves that he was doing that he can't really do anymore because his shoulder's not that good anymore. And taking some of the bumps, you can see, and he'd have like the slow-mo gifs of showing where the weight's being distributed. And you'd see that a lot of the spots that you wouldn't even think about, a lot of the point of impact for Sammy is his shoulder. So it shows that his shoulder is, his wing is kind of busted. And like, I know everyone really wanted this match to be something, but I just don't know if Sammy physically can do it anymore safely and continually have good health. Because I feel like if he even takes a slight tweak, his shoulder's shot, and then he's having surgery again. So I feel like we're seeing the transition of Sami Zayn, the wrestler, to a manager, and I think that's why even in the match, one of his main moves of his upper body was just a clothesline. A lot of his offense and a lot of the work that Brian did on him didn't really touch his shoulders at all. There was no point where there was a lot of stress put on the shoulders. And to me, that just says that Brian A is taking care of him and making sure that he is safe and healthy. But it's also suggesting that the guy that you put the IC title on, while I'm really happy for him, I don't know how much longer Sammy has as a physical competitor because of his shoulder. And it's a damn shame because I really like Sammy. I thought the match was all right. It was too short for my taste, the finish was the finish. I think you could have established the Helluva kick more, but I think overall this match is not so much speaking to, these guys are getting buried. I think it speaks to the health of Sami Zayn and his shoulder.
That's really interesting, actually. That makes a lot of sense. You want to hear that? I don't even think he should be working as a manager. I think he should do what Edge did. You know, go away. And if eventually you get healthy enough that you can wrestle again, then come back, you know, clear with a clean bill of health. But and if not, then transition to another part of your life. Because if there's anybody currently in WWE, and Lord knows they've never used them properly, but if there's anybody who seems to be able to transition to a fully functional life outside of wrestling, it would be Sami Zayn. Like, he seems like he could easily do that, you know.
Well, talked about on Jericho's pod, didn't he? Like, he kind of became like this drifter in some way. He was traveling the world and everything like that. And when he's healthy, I don't really want to go back. Like, I'm just enjoying traveling the world, and he was just crashing with random people and everything like that. And he's a big part, obviously, you know, being around the people of Israel, everything with that he does. He's, like you said, I think he'd benefit, or at least leaving the wrestling business, he'd have no problem with it, and he's already kind of been in that position already.
He might then get healthy enough and get the itch. It could happen eventually.
But it won't be.
I'm not sure how old he is. I would guess late 30s.
Sammy.
Yeah, 36, 38, in that range.
Sammy is.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
He's 35.
35. Yeah, it's a good time to walk away. Walk away for 3, 4, 5 years. And then at 38 to 40, you could come back if you're healthy enough and still have a couple, you know, good years in here.
Yeah. He doesn't have a family or anything to deal with either. So a lot of independence still on that side. And maybe that's something he wants to start, or maybe that's something he doesn't want to start. I don't know his personal life, but he seems like a well-adjusted guy outside of the ring, very well-educated outside of the ring, that he'll just do just fine with it. As for Brian, I mean, everything he's done these past 2 months has really been electrifying with Drew Gulak. I thought maybe the right call was for him to win this and let Brian, you know, kind of go on a roll here. But again, I don't really know what the future of this title or this company is, because as far as we know, nothing was taped past Monday, despite the Money in the Bank ads tonight. So, I don't really know how to comment on stuff outside of that. So,
All they need is to add Mustafa Ali and Chad Gable into this group, and you just let all seven of these guys play off of each other, much
back
like
down seven.
Yeah, and just let them do their thing. Leave them alone.
I don't even mind you add one more person in, you know, then make it 4-4 and keep it that way. I'm not sure who. I don't know if Sheamus would fit because of
he was supposed to be in this match originally, by the way.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking because of, you know, the Cesaro tie-in and the feud with Gable, maybe it would work. But I really liked, especially the Royal Rumble match he had with Gable. I thought nice, really good physical match. So
yeah, I believe Sheamus wanted to get home to Ireland, which is why he wasn't at Mania. I believe that's what I had heard. I don't know if either one of you had heard.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Next up, we have a tag team ladder match. And Mo, I figured out the last singles match for tag titles.
Oh, okay.
It was TNA. It was Kurt and Sting against the Dudleys in a four-way match to get all the gold, and then Kurt won all the gold.
Oh, so that's sort of not quite the same, but it is, I guess.
No,
technically,
but it's the closest I could come to. I had to find a tag team partner. And then I can't remember who he just kind of gave the titles away, I believe, from what I remember. I'll look that up actually right now. But yeah, this match, you know, I thought it, you know, these guys busted their butts and everything like that, but the ending wasn't a huge fan of.
Like 85% of this was good, and then I felt like towards the end, that's near when we saw that spot with Uso, and you know, then clearly into a crash pad and edit, and then that ending. The part I don't get is, seriously, if you're gonna do that ending, does Morrison have to take that bump? Like, this just why? Like, does he have to take that bump?
Probably not.
Yeah, because that just seems.
I wouldn't think he would have to.
Doesn't do anything for anybody except for hurt him, because that hurts. There's no way to fall on that ladder that way without it hurting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bump card, gentlemen, bump card.
Yeah, it just. What did you think of it, Josh?
Really quickly, so Sting defeated AJ, Christian, and Samoa Joe to become Angle's partner, to become the tag team champions with him. So that's how that happened. That's TNA Russo right there, folks. Yep, yeah, that's a Russo.
If we're comparing anything to Russo, that's not a good thing.
No. Yeah, I thought that this was, you know, these guys, but the Spanish Fly is the is almost dead. It's between that and the Canadian pile driver. Those two moves are getting the most overdone. They were like these sensational moves between Special Live, and now they're just kind of like an everyday move. I don't know how sensational they are anymore. I'll always love seeing a Spanish Fly, but I mean, for the longest time, the DDT was a big deal, and now that's exactly. Just a takeover move. It's like we had the Sling Blades everywhere in the same sense too, right? It's when someone starts doing something, we do something, and it's just Sling Blades. And can destroyers so much now. They're so overdone. It's actually, that's my biggest pet peeve in the last year or so is, can we protect the Spanish Flies and the destroyers? Because they're just everywhere, and it's really not great to, you know, a move that should be kept so special. I mean, for the longest time, I called it the Flex Capacitor because that's what it was called in TNA for a second until I got smart enough that it was a Spanish Fly. But, yeah, some sensational moves. They busted their ass despite the weird situations by Miz being an idiot. And the end reminded me of No Mercy when you, in the 64 game, when you grabbed the title and you'd fall off with the title in hand. Kind of reminded me of that. So
I thought the rope walk that Morrison did was very impressive.
Mm-hmm. That was really good. I was like, how many times did it take them to do that edit?
And now I wanted to know how many moves parkour moves it was that he suggested to Edge that Edge ended up using. I'm blaming Morrison for all those.
Yeah. I thought this was fine. They busted their butts. KO and Seth Rollins, the DQ match that wasn't a DQ match. I thought this match was fine. It did give us the WrestleMania moment that you're going to see year to year. And this is where I brought it up organically to let Mo talk about it.
I hate, you know, one of the other pet peeves for this thing was JBL. JBL constantly going, yeah. This is Mania. Isn't this Mania? Look at this Mania. You got to have a Mania moment. This is a Mania moment. Moment. It's great. It's Mania. It's great. It's Mania. It's
yeah,
Mania.
Money Mono. Moment.
I hate he was Mono. Terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever given this rant before. I loathe the day that Mick Foley coined the term my WrestleMania moment because it wasn't a thing. It wasn't a thing until Mick Foley said that before the match with – I guess it was before the match with Edge, wasn't it? I never had – or maybe it was even earlier, but I think it was the match with Edge where he coined that. Nobody had ever thought of that before. So, I mean, the thing is there has always been WrestleMania moments, but they don't happen at every WrestleMania. Not every WrestleMania is a WrestleMania moment. That's what makes them special. Hulk Hogan's body slamming Andre the Giant was probably the first WrestleMania moment that I – you know, maybe Savage – No, Savage Steamboat. No, it was Hogan. It was Hogan body slamming.
It was Hogan,
that's the first WrestleMania moment. That's WrestleMania 3. Maybe
or
the,
Ali
the
coming next... out was kind of Ali coming out.
I don't think it was quite. It was a big pop, but I wouldn't call it a WrestleMania moment in the same way. I would say Andre being slammed. I'm not sure the next one didn't happen when it was Savage and Elizabeth getting together. WrestleMania moment, they're rare, right? Austin and Bret Hart was a WrestleMania moment. The ladder match at WrestleMania 17 is a WrestleMania moment, that entire match, right? They're a rare thing. And the thing is, they happened organically. I mean, yeah, Randy Savage and Elizabeth, clearly they wanted to create a special moment, but it was organic to the characters and the storyline and where they were going. It wasn't done to create a WrestleMania moment. They just wanted to create something for those characters that made sense that people would like. And the same thing, like all the rest of these things, they're all organic. And then somehow after Mick Foley brought this up, now WWE has started booking towards WrestleMania moments instead of letting them happen. So now how many times, because they tried
to relive that at a special moment. We're back with the spot up.
Hey, Josh, you're really starting to break up.
Yeah, I didn't hear almost any of that, but I know what you're saying. Something about Kofi. Were you saying about Kofi? Because Kofi was one where they tried last year, but I don't know that it quite made out. Like they're very rare. That's what makes them great. But now they're booking trying to make them. Like they tried to make a WrestleMania moment for Roman Reigns, what, four times? And I would say he hasn't had one yet. Frankly, beating Undertaker and beating Triple H, to me, those aren't WrestleMania moments. Because the thing is, and that's the thing, you can't just say that's the WrestleMania moment like JBL does in this match between Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. Yeah, that's a particular spot, but you don't decide the WrestleMania moments. The fans decide the WrestleMania moment if they're still talking about it 5 years from now. Then it's a WrestleMania moment. The fans will decide that. Just tell the stories and stop trying to book for a WrestleMania moment. Start booking for good storytelling. That's my rant.
Book for the moment,
for the story, not the moment.
I think the last organic WrestleMania moment was Seth cashing in.
I'd say so.
I think that was the last one. You could even make the argument that the Becky, Ronda, Charlotte, they were kind of forced into, and it really wasn't
a historic moment. But it's not. It's not a WrestleMania moment. It's a historic moment. But that's not the same thing.
The is memorable. It's remember WrestleMania.
Never sounded better. He's moment. Never sounded better than when I can't understand anything he says. So I have to admit.
Well, what we're gonna do is stop for a second, and then we'll pick back up.
See, my thing is, my question is for you guys is, what's a WrestleMania moment to, something that is WrestleMania memorable? So, and the example of that is, let's say the arcade. So Joel talked about the Seth cashing in, right, or whatever. But the RKO that Randy gives to Seth is. Some people say the best RKO ever, right? I want to say that's a WrestleMania moment, though. I think it's memorable.
Yep.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that KO spot a moment or is it memorable? Because we know they're going to show that if it's the one thing they're going to show from this WrestleMania, it'll probably be that jump in the highlights.
But even if they show it, But even if they show it over and over again, it doesn't matter. And like I say, the fans are the ones who will decide. And you won't decide this year. It will be a few years from now if they're still talking about it. You know, I mean, that's the thing about, like, the WrestleMania, like I say, they shouldn't happen often. And you should try and let them happen organically. For instance, WrestleMania 22, I think it was. Let's just say that. WrestleMania 22. In Chicago. Is there a WrestleMania moment from that? What's the memorable thing you remember about that? I remember what the main event was. I remember CM Punk was in. Hunter and Cena. Hunter and I remember CM Punk was in the lineup, but that's not a memorable moment. That's a memorable moment, but not a WrestleMania moment.
That's Edge and Foley and the Flaming Table. Yeah. That's the moment.
Is there? Yeah. You know what? I guess so. That is pretty memorable. Yeah, I'll give that a WrestleMania moment, sure. But that changed the trajectory of how they started booking. It ended up being a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I don't know. To me, the last they're very rare. Hunter and Michaels and Undertaker at the end of that Hell in the Cell at the top of the stage would have been a WrestleMania moment if it actually had been the end of the era. You know,
and
but
there was none of any of those last matches. Even John had another match against Taker.
Exactly. But I mean, that to me is like, that actually would have, that felt organic. That's kind of still a WrestleMania moment, despite what they did afterwards. Undertaker losing the streak is certainly a WrestleMania moment, because it's like, what? You know? But the next year, is there a WrestleMania moment? Well,
yeah, because that's 31.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, yeah, the Seth, And I guess Brian winning it, but 33 is
a moment. Brian's definitely a moment. Brian's the last super, super, duper big moment.
Yeah, probably the last super, but is there any on 33? Like, is there been any since then? Can you, like I say, it was cool to see Kofi win last year, but it's about the equivalent, of seeing, it's the equivalent of seeing, Randy Savage beat Flair. It was fun to watch.
It should have been the Becky one, but it wasn't.
But it was a story. Yeah. So you'll remember it, but it's not a WrestleMania moment. It's WrestleMania moments are those things that they take on a legend. And if I say this to you, hey, want to go to WrestleMania? Immediately an image or two or three will flash through your mind. And those images.
Mickey grabbing Chris's vagina, right? That's a WrestleMania moment.
Well, that's a moment I would have liked to have been in, but still. Hey, who says I'm not a chauvinist? Who's been saying that? Those assholes. Anyways, what were we doing now before you just totally ruined me?
Well, I was just saying it was about moments or not, right? I mean, even it goes to your point of them saying they try to recreate moments before I was breaking up like a banshee. The Kofi spot that he had at Madison Square Garden a few years ago, right? That was like the first real big Kofi moment of his career, right? And when he had this feud with Randy last year, they tried to recreate it in Madison Square Garden. He missed the first table spot. He finally did it. He did it. And it's like, you can't, it was organic because it was Kofi's big moment for the first time. He was doing something and it just worked. And now you're trying to do it again to make it matter. And it didn't.
How many of them, when you think about the Attitude Era, there's tons and tons and tons of moments where they were just creating good TV that was just fun, like Austin coming down with the beer truck. That's a memorable – that's a Raw moment. That's the equivalent of one of the things like, Austin bleeding or Andre being slammed. Like Austin coming down with the beer truck and spraying. But you're not trying to create a moment. It became that because it becomes that. Like I say, the fans will decide. Don't quit talking about it. Quit saying when Zack Ryder wins the IC belt, it's a WrestleMania moment. No, it's not. Is Zack Ryder winning the IC belt and he's going to lose it right away?
Yeah, he did the next night.
Exactly.
Match overall I thought was fine. You could do better. I don't know why we did the DQ halfway. And that's about all I have to say overall on it.
They did. If they had took that out and just made it the no DQ from the beginning, much better.
Yeah.
Anything yet, Joel?
Nope. I think everything's been covered.
Braun and Goldberg, I don't have much to say on this. I guess I get the decision to put it on Braun. You don't know how long you're gonna you know, until Roman could get back. So it's probably smarter to put it onto a champion that can do interviews and can be at TVs of whatever they are, because Goldberg won't be that guy. So I guess I get it. I you know, I think the marketing and everything, if you did know that and you filmed this on the 27th, that's been almost 10 days since you've had that opportunity. It's pretty shitty marketing on your point. I get your decision to put it on Braun Strowman, but I highly question the marketing you had and the reason you got to get there. And the match itself was just unbelievably lazy. And so that's my main thoughts on it.
Lazy, blink and you miss it. Move on to the next thing.
The only thing I'll say about it is I'm pretty sure I'm watching this, that this is just everything is going, okay, we don't know where Reigns is back. So SummerSlam's going to be Braun versus Bray. Like that's, I watched it. I went, oh, they're just setting up Braun versus Bray for SummerSlam. That's their idea. That was my only thinking.
Taker and AJ, I think we've talked about that at the beginning, so we don't know how much we really need to talk about this.
It gets a thumbs up from me, that's all.
Get the thumbs up from me. I thought it was an enjoyable thing. I will say this, Mo, you talked about the difference between the Randy match and this match. They're both in the same time zone. This is 35 minutes. The Randy match was 36. I will say the one positive thing about this is this never felt like it dragged compared to the Randy match feeling like it dragged.
I think the fact that you had the Druids and the Gallows and Anderson helped a little bit because it kept it a little bit fresher. I would give this a thumbs in the middle, personally. I'm not a thumbs up or thumbs down.
And I get what your points are, and they're totally fair points. I think the crash pad is a fair point as well. And I think, too, where we are, and we're just looking for easy entertainment right now. I mean, God's sake, Tiger King is the number one set of entertainment right now. We're looking for anything to just entertain us, and people are like, yeah, this is cool. So that was night one. What would you guys have given night one? I kind of go where Mo had this. I'd give night one a thumbs in the middle.
Yeah, it's in the middle. It's there.
Yeah, there was some good and some bad. You know, I think I would give it a 6 out of 10, knowing that probably their ceiling in this case is a 7 out of 10. Like, I think that they probably did about as good as you can, but given no crowd and all this and that, you're not going to. You know, but actually, tell you the truth, that might be because I said all the things they could do better, like better entrances and like you talk about gear and better announcing and having some sort of trying to get some sort of crowd noise from other wrestlers or something. You know, there probably was things that maybe I'm being generous, but I'll give it a 6.
Yeah,
I was surprised there. Night two, we started the pre-show with Liv and Italia, went 6:25 with Liv winning. I got to say, I'm not saying this was a 4-star or 5-star classic, but I enjoyed this match way more than I should have at all. I think I just like the idea of Natty really used the beneficent of being able to talk. And it was kind of this teacher versus student dynamic. And Natty's just so good in ring that she took something that could have been just totally throwaway, which in some people's minds, I absolutely get that it was. But I had it got me excited to start this night at WrestleMania. I thought it was a fine start, and I thought Natty really took the idea that she could talk and ring, and she ran with it and gave Liv probably her best match ever.
Natty's a good trash talker, right? Who was the babyface and who's the heel? I don't get it there.
That point I give to you, yeah. That part I didn't know. That part I didn't know, but I thought it was better than I had anything to be. Then we go to the main show. We have Stephanie again. We have the same promo package again. And then, by the way, it was so weird watching that promo package. Toni Storm was in that. You can only wonder what the plan was for Toni Storm. And kind of feel bad for her. She was used in like the main promo package for WrestleMania.
That's true. I imagine she would have been, maybe it would have been her instead of Tamina. In fact, that's probably what happened with Tamina. Vince thought they said Tamina when they said Tony. And he goes, yeah, I'll put Tamina in. And they go, no, Tony, she's a British girl. Yeah, Tamina, it's Snooker-son. By the way, that's my one question for you. I want to know is, Josh, when did you have time to record the voice for Vince McMahon's puppet?
Oh, you know, I made sure that we did it in between. It's such good shit. We'll get to that. Charlotte and Rhea Ripley went 20-30. Charlotte is the NXT champion. I think Charlotte Man, she may be Miss WrestleMania. 3 out of her 4 matches have been 4 stars or above for me now. The triple threat with Sasha and Becky was phenomenal. Her Oscar match, I still think, is the highlight of her WrestleMania career. Last year was the one dud of the bench, and I really, really like this match. I think it was some old school wrestling, working on the leg, kind of the ring psychology that Mo talked about, that you have in Japan and other places that you like about wrestling. I thought that did a really good job in this. The cut's obviously not ideal, but I thought these two put together, in my opinion, the match of the event.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Joel to jump in there. Yeah, I think it was a good match, but I really certainly I think just the atmosphere for this style of match really hurt it. It's a match with a lot of babyface firing up spots, and so you don't really get those.
Yep.
But I don't know. She probably does give. I'm not a huge fan of Charlotte by any means, but she has had good WrestleMania matches. Now that you mention it, she really has. So she does deserve that credit. Yeah.
I thought it was a good match. I don't know what the match of overall weekend is, but I think this is one of the matches that you could definitely say is in the running. I thought they did a good job, and now just give me Io Shirai versus Charlotte Flair.
And if you take away the cinematic aspects, I don't know, man. It's really difficult because I wouldn't count either one of those two, right? So
no, that's what I'm not counting.
It becomes really difficult. I think it's much the same as what Joel had said, that you can't give these star ratings because they're post-production they're not real matches in that way. So it's really difficult to decide what's the best match.
Next up, we have Aleister Black and Bobby Lashley. This match went way longer than it had any right to be. I don't get what they – I mean, Lash has pants now. Cool. Black should have won this in a lot bigger fashion to kind of shave down the time. It went 7:20. Aleister Black won, and there's dissension between Lana and her husband, Bobby Lashley.
That was my only takeaway, was now you're going to break up Lana and Bobby Lashley? Good Lord. Good Lord.
Is she going to go back with Rusev?
Probably. I don't know what the hell's going on. What do you think are Rusev's odds of leaving?
High. What if his odds of going to AEW? I don't... Not great. Jericho has said, we're not taking everybody to AEW. And I don't really know if they need to take Rusev. Everyone they've taken to AEW, it's been a WWE guy. I get Brody Lee. I get Matt Hardy. I don't really see the need to understand Rusev when you have guys like Kip Sabian and others that really haven't got their full chances yet.
I think it depends on that extra extra television time that they're going to have that second show, how big their roster they feel they need to be, and the fact that Rusev and the Revival, for how good they are and how underused they've been, and Rusev, you could argue the same for a vast majority of his career. I think that's what they're looking at. They're not looking for everybody. Like if Zack Ryder, despite being, one of Cody's best friends, if he became available, would he be going to AEW? I don't think so. But Rusev, I think they'd go, yeah, there's money there. People like him, and they didn't use him right.
This is true. Joel, any thoughts on this match?
Went too long. Weird finish. Black won. Yay.
Next up, we have Otis defeating Dolph Ziggler with Sonya Deville in 8:15. The match was fine. The end was all that mattered, and it just sucks because the pop when Mandy would have came out and done her heat up spots, and then eventually, Otis kind of eventually gave him the kiss. The match doesn't really matter. It's everything in between that just really lacked a crowd. I'm happy for Otis. We all were on a Zoom chat and all cheered, but it sucked that it didn't have that crowd pop, and for that, it unfortunately fails.
Yeah, it lacked that reaction just from the audience, and I just
found the announcers that should have been their job there to really get that over, and that's what the announcers this week sucked.
Yes, and you could have easily gone in post and changed some of that, but clearly you were happy with what you got. The pairing of Sonya and Ziggs was just. And the way they were kind of presented was like, I don't think you fully understand what you have with Sonya at all.
No, she's so good. She should have been in that women's match. I don't know why she wasn't. Yeah, happy for Otis, and this is probably the highlight of his career. And is he even in the Battle Royal next year?
When does Tucker get broken up from him? And that's the question.
Poor Tucker didn't even come out with him.
I know.
The one time they sell an injury angle.
Yeah, exactly.
No shit. I mean, if this was regular TV going on, I would see Mandy teaming with them together, and then I think they would be the ones to defeat Miz and Morrison for the titles, but I don't know what the future of television is, so I can't speak on that right now.
Feels like all of a sudden we're getting a lot of tag teams with the female, especially on SmackDown. But yeah, you got the Angel Garza and whoever his partner is with Vega and Selena Vega, and you got Belair now with the Street Profits, and you got Mandy with the Heavy Machinery, and Tip. I guess you could have Rude and Ziggler with Sonya. That one's weird. But yeah, I mean, it seems like all of a sudden we're having a ton of this tag teams with a female, I don't know, valet or whatever you would call them. But yeah.
Sonic valet, goddammit. Just there. Next up, we have Last Man Standing match. 36 hours, 35 minutes.
Ugh. Yeah. This is long.
Only 36 hours?
Only 36 hours, yeah. Whoever came up with the spots with the gym equipment and the sling over the neck, and they didn't edit that out after what had been in the news for the past 2 weeks, you should be ashamed of yourself. Oh, I don't know how that gets past editing. Like, that was brutal. Like, come on.
You sit, like, I didn't even think about, because I was already kind of floating in and out. I was pretty tired. And, like, then when you see Alvarez in a tweet, and I go back and I watch it, and I'm like, I think I've seen this before somewhere in a dramatic documentary series that we won't talk about at all because don't want to bum everyone else out.
No, we've done that. Move on.
That was not a good call to make as a company. That was really, 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 really
dumb. And Canadian, nonetheless, by the way, too.
And, like, not to go too far down, that I just think of Edge, and I just, like, you'd think of all the people, he'd be like, maybe this isn't a good idea to do. But it happened, and then it had, like, a half an hour after that of things happening. It was throwing off. Why would you have a boardroom office that has a steel cage as its roof, or the top of it, a roof decor? Like,
I don't know, man.
Only in wrestling.
Like, I can't imagine that they built anything for this. This must have all been what was there. They walked through and went, I think if we hadn't seen, Ciampa and Gargano rustling all over the Performance Center really a short while before, also, that would have helped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just really, remember that ladder they had that was like 10,000 feet high?
Yeah.
I was just so glad they didn't use that. I was so afraid. It looked like they were going to. The ending was good. Like the ending of Edge feeling guilty that he has to do this, but realizing he has to do this, that was good. And as far as, like I said, Edge didn't look so good for me in the Rumble, and I don't think he did. Much like Taker, this is a good way to hide him because things like running the ropes are things that are surprisingly will expose a guy who's hurting and can't move like he once did, and you didn't have any of that. So from that perspective, but I just can't imagine that he came back to be a wrestler. This is not a wrestling match. This is as close as what he was doing to when he was fighting on a movie set on Haven or Vikings. That was closer to that. It's not a wrestling match. Like, is this satisfying for him?
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't satisfying for me as far as I wanted. I did like the tweet that Beth sent when he did jump off the ladder at that one point. Beth's like, I'm not going to, he had a quote, I guess, that said, I'm not going to go off ladders anymore. And she's like, Adam Copeland, my husband, the idiot. Yeah.
Yeah, this, from the perspective of like they really did take a lot of heavy bumps and really beat themselves up, and it was very physical from the perspective of a guy like him taking a lot of risk and possibly shortening whatever comeback he has. This seems like the wrong match.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. It went 16 minutes too long, really yeah. dragged on. There's parts at the end, like you said, I really liked Edge brought up point this week. He's doing an interview saying, I think every wrestler should take acting even before they take bumps, or do some of your bumps and then take acting classes. And you can tell like his acting chops really worked there. And that was the good part of the storytelling. And so I agree with you on that promo. I thought that part really worked, but it was just too damn long.
Yeah. Too much of just the same. Mm-hmm. Just this, it's just an ongoing, no psychology, just two guys hitting each other.
Next up, unless Joel, do you have anything else to add?
No, nope.
Good, okay. good. We never think good. You do.
Street Profits match, they won, and then Bianca Belair debuted. Any thoughts?
Nope.
Okay. Bailey.
Well, how do you think Austin Theory looked?
He looked better than I thought he would. Still green.
He looked like creator wrestler number 7 on WWE 2K20 that you could make. I think he's one of those guys that I just don't understand why they put in his spot, because there is clearly something there. Just let him grow, let him mature, season him, let him do stuff in NXT, let him make mistakes, let him fail in NXT to ultimately succeed. I get it, you're under the gun, and it's who's going to turn down this opportunity, but...
It should have been Cedric and Ricochet. That's what the match should have been. You know, those guys are doing the house show loops. Give them the respect of having a Mania spot. I know this isn't rainy to some people, but no disrespect to Angel Garza and Austin Theory. You know, they're two talented guys, but Ricochet and Cedric have done the house show loops, and you deserve a WrestleMania spot for doing those spots. Let the roster that does those spots have that WrestleMania spot. And that part is inexcusable to not have either one of them on the card, or anyone that is a main roster guy not have that opportunity.
I agree. And the thing about Theory is, I think he's only 22. He's a good prospect. Yep. He's not a great prospect. I mean, one of the things, if you look at the AEW is getting over guys, Darby Allin's, I think, 23, 22 for Jungle Jack Perry, Jungle Boy, MJF, I think, is just turned 24. Sammy G, I think, is 23. These guys are already good, and they're getting over a bunch of young talent. WWE doesn't have that. But going with Austin Theory is not the right move.
Their guy is in that age range is the dream. That's their guy.
Yeah, he's the guy who's in the he's about it. But he is the guy in that age range.
Yeah. I just thought a bad idea for the opponents. And cool, I guess Bianca got called up. Sweet. And there's another female led with the tag team there, Mo.
Exactly. And you get it. She's got to go with her husband, but storyline wise, considering they haven't really fit into that,
nope.
You better feed into that. You better feed. Mm-hmm. Give me a storyline. I don't care what it is, but don't just hover there. But that's all they'll do because they're lazy and don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yep. Bailey defeated Lacey Evans, Naomi, Sasha Banks, and Tamina.
How long was this match?
It was 19 minutes. It was 19 minutes.
That's all.
I thought, did Lacey Evans, was she decent in this match?
She's improved. And they were smart to get Tamina out first. Yeah, she's improved, and they got Tamina out first. Both of those things helped it. The ending was a little strange, but it kind of played into my prediction, actually.
Yeah, the futurist. I actually did like the ending. I like that, even though I was rooting for Sasha to get the belt, and I did pick her, I did like how they went about it. Let's just tease Sasha and Bayley forever. Let's just never get a payoff, and we'll just tease this forever. That's all we're going to do. And
more the only way you can have it is in 2K. The futurist, this is exactly what I said. Bayley, you said Sasha will win in order to lead to their feud, and I said, no, Bayley will win for the same reason, to lead to their feud.
Yeah.
Man, I'm good.
Yes, you are. You're futurist. And yeah, I got to give Lacey credit. I thought Lacey, I mean, working with Natty again for 2 months will do that to you. I thought, and look, edited product helps as well, but I thought Lacey was fantastic in this match.
That moonsault move that she has for where she was. Cool.
Yeah, I think she's really grown. She knows her character. Her character work was already fine. We already knew that about Lacey, but now she's been able to get to a point where, you know, look at the Royal Rumble last year when she did those two kip-ups and they were super sloppy and not good. And she's gotten to a point now where she can be someone reliable in the ring. Tamina being in here, I didn't understand. I would have personally had Carmella in instead. But for whatever
like I
reason,
say,
have Carmella.
They said Tony Storm and he hurt Tamina. I'm sure of it.
But yeah, Bayley wins and I guess we see where her and Sasha go.
Yeah, it was fine. It was there. Give me a slow burn, but turn it on this time.
Like, it's give me a slow burn, but actually this time don't throw away the storyline.
Yeah. I'm going to skip the next match because we're going to talk about that more. So let's go to the main event. We'll come back. Drew and Brock, like I said, with Braun and Goldberg, it was you do big move. Big move, big move. I do big move. Big move, big move. You win. Caveman match. That's what I call these. These are caveman matches.
These are essentially, this is Heyman's matches. Heyman has a history of putting together that match because he puts together Braun Strowman's match. Or sorry, Brock Lesnar's match. And this was Brock's Lesnar's match against Strowman. This was Brock Lesnar's match against Samoa Joe and against Goldberg, as you mentioned. And now it happened to both to Strowman and Goldberg. And by the way, Goldberg, man, he really is starting to look his age, isn't he?
Yeah. The Goldberg match with Brock were the only good ones with this. Drew's a talented guy. I'm just happy Super Drew got the title. I like the I don't know if it's a WrestleMania moment or not, but I like the moment of him like looking at the camera saying thank you. That seemed very genuine to me at least.
I think that was genuine. Yeah, but I'm sorry. Gonna,
yeah.
It fell flat, not having an audience coming after the Cena
or
match.
Or Vince for the handshake. He came on doing the handshake. Just the kind of prophecy 360.
It just didn't have the impact of this guy's world champion the way that it has when, you know, when
Austin.
Yeah, Austin beat Michaels as an example, you know.
Again, like, the announcers failed in this. This was a terrible, broadcaster myself, and hitting impact situations, right? Like, I have a guy that knocks down 5 threes in a row. I let people know that moment matters. I thought the broadcasters, all of them, really let us down tonight. They did not. Titus did the best job as a broadcaster tonight.
Hogan Warrior. Like, there's been a lot of title changes that have really meant a lot. And this didn't have that, man. It fell flat. But that said, Drew is a wicked talent. And if they book him right from here on in, it'll be great to see how big a star he can become.
I think he can
become. Absolutely. I mean, what a story, too.
I think he can become 1A and Roman's 1B or vice versa, however you want to look at it. I think Roman's a reliable, well-spoken. He's not shooting his mouth off on Twitter. He's good with fans. Like, you just hear nothing but good things about when he's interacting with people. He's well spoken, so you got a layup there for everything media related. It's really good to see him in this spot. He deserves it. I'm definitely over the Brock matches. Like, well, not the Brock matches, but the Brock big man style matches. I'd like to see a little bit more, and I don't know who McIntyre's next feud is. Just hypothetically, say we're heading in.
Just before you get into that, I have to say, part of the reason I think this falls flat is because, well, they're talking about there and they're building up Brock. I saw Brock last year lose to Seth Rollins in like 90 seconds or whatever, and I've lately he has been losing more, you know. And I am sick of him as champion. He just feels like he's championing. This one, at least I'll say this, it doesn't feel like they're going back to him anytime soon, if at all. So that's the good thing. But just the fact that a year ago he loses to Seth, who for some reason never wants the title, despite the fact that he beat him in no time at all, and Brock has it all this time, you know. That I think is part of the reason why it fell flat for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's really weird too. They showed the Hollywood promo, right? Just kind of want to talk about this before we get to the Firefly match. Did you guys find it very weird that they promoed, you know, the Hollywood thing, and they had all these different, like, they had the Suplex City lights, and they had the New Day thing, and they had the Becky thing? One superstar was absent in the promo stuff for Hollywood WrestleMania.
That was Roman?
It was Roman.
I didn't notice that.
Was it a coincidence?
No.
And am I looking too much into it?
No, you're not.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that Roman wasn't part of the package. And you and I talked that, you know, there's some rumblings that they are a little bit upset that he left.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe they just don't know for sure that he'll be back in that time. It's like I said, yeah. I think it's a really strong possibility he's not coming back till there's a vaccine.
I don't know if they have that far wherewithal to think of him not being back long term. I think based on the history of this company, I think pettiness is strong. Pettiness runs strong in this company, and I could see them being a little miffed at Roman. Being like, see, no one tested positive for COVID, so you had nothing to be scared about. You could have just done the show.
If they are considering the man in his situation health-wise and his family and this and that, if they are feeling that way, fuck them forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of his best friends works for the competition, so not a good look.
No, I mean,
that could be the Hogan of this era. I don't know what Roman's contract is, and I'm not saying he'd go to AEW. I'm just saying that could be the Hogan of this era.
That would be a massive beyond belief.
I think Vince would have a stroke.
Yeah.
And he can just be Joe Anatani, because the Anatani name carries a lot of weight with wrestling fans. So, and I'm not saying that's going to happen. But
how much better would he be? How much more over would he be? You hear about what a cool guy he is backstage and how good he is in and I've seen it, you know, when he's not scripted, like in sit downs and whatever, how good, you know, he is. And yeah, I mean, he'd get over so huge. Didn't Jericho say that he would get over so huge in AEW?
Jericho said he's one of his favorite people to hang out with, that he's ever hung out with ever. He's like an old school brother. Anyways, I just saw that point, thought we kind of talk about that minor note. I don't know how big he's going to go. Then we had Bray Wyatt defeated John Cena in the Firefly Funhouse. Joel, I thought you did a really good job of breaking stuff down on this. Like I said, my favorite part was just, you know, they have this ability to the WWE library, and they did they used that library one of the best ways I've ever seen them use it. And Bray kind of feels a little bit redeemed to the Seth stuff and the Goldberg stuff. It feels like he's got at least his legs back under him now. What the future holds, I don't know, but he feels a little bit redemptive with some of the creativity choices they were able to have in this.
Yeah. And
the charisma that he put up.
I love going through Cena's past, like showing the clips of every failure in Cena's life was just like the Punk blowing the kiss and just other little things. I'm just like,
should we read anything into that? That was the first active thing of Punk I've seen on like a major broadcast.
No.
I wouldn't put anything into it. They're just using Cena's history.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of it, Mo?
I thought it was I thought it was well done. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it made there was a lot of sense behind it. I mean, I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, good Lord, like, what Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt with both of their creative minds should have been able to do if the WWE had just gotten out of the way. Yeah. You know, it would have been awesome. But the thing is, the weird thing to me is, though, it wasn't a match. So I mean, John Cena, did he take a bump even? Like, I guess he took the finish at the end. But, like, it's not a wrestling match. He took one move. I'm trying to think of when his last match was then. You know, his last match at Mania, then his actual last match, because I don't know. But his last match at Mania would have been against The Miz and that tag team, right? Because you don't count Yeah, you don't count the Undertaker thing. No, that wasn't a match.
I think it was that Roman match.
Yeah, that's forever ago, dude. And when's his next match? Like, I hope he doesn't want to go out. I mean, it's entertaining. Both of them look like they're having a blast. Certainly, especially Cena to me, looked like he was having so much fun.
My question is, but you mentioned the keyword there. Didn't take a bump. We talked about the Taker thing. Maybe this opens something for Foley, for Sting.
Ooh.
I wonder if this was always the idea for him. Does this open something up for The Rock?
That's what I was just thinking. Good point. Because now you can do The Rock, and can Taker. Be like,
We don't have to. We don't have to take bumps. I can do some cinematic shit now. So you reopen The Rock. You've reopened Austin.
Yes, that's a fascinating concept.
Because I wonder.
The whole point, and that Cena was saying in all this, and this is true, is that God damn it, they got to stop going back to these old people like Goldberg and Zick. They got to stop saying that the people in the past are better than the people now, and they got to stop going back to them. At some point, if you think about the Attitude Era, when they were hot, they weren't going back to people from the Rock and Wrestling Era. You know what I mean?
22 years ago now, by the way. The Attitude Era. Like you're 22
you're going,
years now.
You're go, you keep going back to that era or
well,
even
let
there,
me tell
even
you
that,
something, dude. I'm even coming, the, brother.
Even the Ruthless Aggression era, you can't keep doing this because at some point in time, you have to establish that these people are the stars now. And you've been telling people for the longest time they aren't, because these people at WrestleMania are pushed aside for people like Undertaker and Triple H and Batista. And you know what? It's psychologically, it's laid a foundation where these people are not seen as the stars that they need to be. And they frankly have to do that. But, you know, if you want to bring The Rock back, not at WrestleMania and it's something else and do this, it could be a nice boost. I like the idea of Joel said of doing these every now and then as a special, like a half hour special on the network. Yeah. Like I love that.
My question for both of you is, I don't think the Boneyard match was a match if we had the show in Tampa. I wonder if Firefly was maybe an idea that they did have, because I wonder if any studios have restrictions to Cena, much like they had with The Rock. Or there was always going to be a match, but they would have been a little bit more safer with it. I don't know.
It's interesting to kind of think about, because it would make sense, but it would be terrible for that audience to have to watch a screen for the 15 minutes that it went on. But
that's the problem.
You look at this and you go, like, this, I love the Hogan stuff. I loved Cena in the little wrestling tights. I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And I only have one complaint that takes it from 20 stars to 17 stars for me. I did not get the Vince McMahon puppet saying, "What a maneuver." Missed opportunity.
That's true. What a maneuver would have been good, though. The this is some good shit stuff. What's great about that is he I'm sure he doesn't know that he was quoted as saying that in the podcast.
Mox, yeah.
he would know Moxley talked shit about him, but he wouldn't know that Moxley said that. Now somebody's probably going to tell him. I wonder what he's going to think. But Cena's face really looked old, though. Oh my god.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we had people saying that in a Zoom chat.
Yeah, really looked old.
I was going to say, I totally forgot what I was going to say. It's getting late.
I had something else I was going to add, and I can't remember what the hell it is. So can't have been that important.
No, it couldn't have been that important. I just think, you know, it was kind of a fun.
Joel, what is it you just said? Repeat what you said, because that'll put me into what I was going to say.
Maybe me too.
Yeah, go ahead. Just say it one more time. What were you saying? So repeat it. Or maybe don't repeat it, but paraphrase it. Whatever the hell you're going to do.
It was something about Cena looking old, or Cena and his ring gear. I like that. And I like seeing like the SmackDown fist again, and just the little callbacks that they had in all of this, I thought was enjoyable. And I, as a wrestling fan, was rewarding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't click anything in my memory, but good point.
Night two, where are you? Night two, I'm kind of the same. Thumbs in the middle. I think it's a thumbs in the middle show. I don't think it's the worst WrestleMania ever for what they had to deal with. I thought they went away with a they had memorable moments from this Mania. I'm not saying they're WrestleMania moments, but, you know, it's memorable things from this WrestleMania. It's not the worst. I'm interested to see how we look back at it 5 years from now. Do we look at these cinematic moments the same way 5 years from now? But overall, I think it's a thumbs in the middle. It's like a 6.5 out of 10 for WrestleMania. And what I guess the bigger question is, and 2 points for both of you, is where do you have it? And does this lead to the coming years of them splitting up Manias into two nights?
I think eventually they're going to get to two nights. I think they're going to see it and they're going to be like, let's do it. And I think for this show, I still sit at like a 5.5 out of 10.
I gave it a 6 out of 10, same as I gave the night before. So I give it a 6 out of 10 overall. You know, it's so that means that it's almost 50 times better than WrestleMania 9. So that's not bad. You know, this is not the worst wrestle. 9, 10, 11, 12, even 13, except for one match. Oh, sucked. Like there were some dead years there. So yeah, I mean, it's not the worst WrestleMania, even close. It's as far as two nights, I think they're going to do it until it burns itself out. And I think it will burn itself out after you do it 3, 4, 5 times in that range. I think it will. People only got so much. And one of the things that's been keeping WWE going is the fact that the average customer they have, while they have a lot less of them, they're willing to spend more money on them. But I think that so per head, the people are spending more. Or have been historically over the last 5 years or so. But I think that eventually people are just going to run out of money for this stuff. So I think that's going to bite them in their ass. And eventually everybody has to have gone to a travel to a WrestleMania. I mean, you're going to LA next year.
I think so. Yeah. What would you do, Mo? Me and Joe were kind of talking about this off air today. What is the idea that the SmackDown's kind of a pain in the ass? The only thing I can really come to a solid conclusion is TakeOver Thursday, Hall of Fame airs on Fox. That's the SmackDown.
Didn't we get a 1 hour edit one time of the Hall of Fame?
Yeah,
I could see USA. Them doing that on Fox. Yeah. And you know, you could air it, you could tape it, and you know, you could go it back to back and do it Thursday. I don't know. Maybe you do it. I don't know how you do it all. To be honest with
that,
you could
that Friday's
you could,
a pain, you could do, you know what, a pain in the ass.
You know what? You know what? The Hall of Fame could happen at noon on Saturday or Sunday. Easily.
So what, like, do you just have SmackDown then? Just have SmackDown?
Yeah, you just have SmackDown Friday, you have Thursday's TakeOver, you have SmackDown Friday, you have you do the Hall of Fame on the afternoon, like noon, 2 o'clock, somewhere in that range. You know, and lead directly. If you say you do it at 2 o'clock and it goes till 4, and it leads directly into the pre-show for Mania. I mean, there's ways to do it. You can figure it out. I figure that's the way to do it. But you know, the other thing they could do. Well, I guess it's kind of fun sometimes. But I'm not. I mean, that the WWE Hall of Fame is, you know, not as it's not exactly the hall of the most deserving.
Hey man, the limo driver's in there, okay?
Yeah. Yeah. anything else, yeah, gentlemen, or do I get to my joke now?
I'll just say my final point is I just don't, whether this was good or bad, it's a WrestleMania that I will never forget, but I would like to forget this age. And yeah. I really look forward to, whether I am there or not, to getting back to the big stadiums, the pyro, and the grandeur of WrestleMania. I really did miss that grandeur of WrestleMania and the over, like the Super Bowl like feeling that we get from it, that continually felt missed tonight. And maybe next year is going to suck, but I will not take that level that WWE takes WrestleMania for granted ever again.
I think that's well said. I think that sums up a lot of how I feel too.
Joel, last thoughts? I'm good going out on that note.
Okay, Mo, joke us away.
All right. So this guy, he's got himself 3 separate women. He's been dating 3 separate women, and they're all bugging him to settle down with her. Him, and he decides he's going to do a little test and just see determine who he thinks is the best woman for him. So he gives each of them $5,000 to see what they do with it. And the first woman, she goes out and she gets herself all done up. She gets herself made as beautiful as possible. She gets her hair done. She gets everything done up. But she does it for him. She comes back so she'll be the most beautiful woman she can be to him. She does that for him. He thinks, that's pretty good. I appreciate that she did that. And she did that for me. You know, this the second woman, she goes out and she buys him a really expensive suit and makes incredibly expensive pair of shoes and some really fancy cigars. She spends all the money on him. He thinks that's really great. I really, really appreciate that. That's also wonderful. You know, nice to be appreciated like that. And the third woman goes out and she invests all the money, and she invests it in these different stocks and different options and different things. And she turns that $50,000 in 1 week into $25,000 and gives it all to him. I think, so that's amazing. You know, what a great woman. It's just, you know, he's like, I don't know what to do. They're all just so terrific. So I married the one with the biggest boobs.
And on that note, stay safe and enjoy the day, people.
Goodbye. And good night. Bye.